You're listening to the La Jolla Cosmetic Podcast.
Welcome, everyone, to the La Jolla Cosmetic Podcast. I'm your hostess, Monique Ramsey, and today we're going to talk about rhinoplasties or nose jobs, which I've never really loved that term, but that's what it is. We're going to do a little job to make your nose look better. So our guest today is Dr. Kirsten Riedler. She's a board-certified facial plastic surgeon, and we have a whole episode where we've met her, so you can listen to that. I'll have that in the show notes, but welcome, Dr. Riedler.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
So let's talk about rhinoplasty. And so this is one of your areas of expertise, something you love doing. So tell us about why you love it and what things can be corrected with rhinoplasty.
Well, I love rhinoplasty because it's a very complicated procedure that really is never the same because two noses are never the same. And so it always requires some creativity, and it's basically never boring.
And what are the things that really cannot be corrected with a rhinoplasty?
So everyone's face is asymmetric to some degree, and surgery can't correct that. However, usually the asymmetry is minor. And so it's not something that's obvious. Basically, what we're trying to do with rhinoplasty is create overall facial balance and correct proportions without any obvious asymmetry that anybody's going to notice.
Yeah, I remember seeing when I used to do imaging with Dr. Olison. He did a lot of noses, and you could split the screen. You could do two lefts of your face and two rights. Because people, I think, don't realize.
It looked like two different people.
It's so true. Where you split that screen and you do, you know, two lefts, it looks like a completely different person or two rights. And I think it's a great way to sort of illustrate to a patient really how asymmetric our faces really are. Because I don't think any of us realize. And so when you kind of see it that way, it's like, oh, but that's what makes you you and makes you look like you. So are the things that, like, say somebody would have their nose broken, which makes it asymmetrical. Is that something that you are able to fix, though?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, asymmetries that are obvious and not related to underlying facial asymmetry are definitely correctable. The main thing I'm talking about is when the midline of your face is not perfectly straight. So when the middle of your eyes and the middle of your central teeth don't line up perfectly straight, that's something we're not going to correct. So what we do is make your nose as straight as possible with regard to those two midlines. But we don't want to make your nose straight with respect to just your eyes or just your teeth, because then it'll look like a Picasso painting.
Oh,
right. Because it won't, it might match your teeth, but it doesn't match your eyes. And so it doesn't look quite right.
Interesting. I've never thought about that, but I love that. And that's a really good visual for all of us. Now, is it true that your nose grows as you get older?
So not exactly. The nasal tip especially becomes more droopy as we age. And studies have shown actually that that's due to atrophy of the skin and the muscles and changes in the cartilage, but it's not actually growing, although it is changing in shape and becoming apparently longer and droopy, but it's not growing in size.
Isn't that great that everything droops, including your nose?
Yeah, it happens with your ears too. Ears get bigger. Why? As we age, and it's the same kind of thing. It's because they get droopy, essentially.
Lovely. Okay. Well, there's always something we can fix. So now, could people, if they're thinking about having a rhinoplasty, you know, can you have it at any age?
So in most cases, it's advisable to wait until your facial skeletal growth is complete. So that's in general around age 15 in females and 17 in males. But it's also important to assess the degree of psychological maturity, because it's not just the physical growth that we want to consider. We want to, you know, make sure we're doing surgery in people who are mature enough to cope with the change in their appearance.
Mm-hmm. So Are there different types of rhinoplasty techniques? Like, how many different kinds are there?
So there are really hundreds of techniques that we use during rhinoplasty, but the main distinction is between the two most common approaches that we use, either the external or open approach or the endonasal or closed approach. So in the open approach, a small external incision is made on the skin in between the nostrils, and that's continued inside the nostrils. Whereas closed rhinoplasty technique is done with more extensive internal incisions, but no skin incision on the outside.
What would determine which approach you use?
Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is just surgeon preference and experience. I generally prefer the open or external approach because it gives me really full access to all of the nasal anatomy and the septum, and just lets me manipulate everything and see everything clearly. The cases where I use closed technique is typically when it's either a revision or just some minor changes need to be done.
So there's going to be a little incision there. So what does mm-hmm. that end up looking like for the patient, or what's the healing of that scar?
There are stitches there for a week after surgery, but even at a week when we take the stitches out, it's not a very visible scar and it heals so that it's pretty much imperceptible. Within a few weeks, it's pretty much invisible. I mean, it's very small to begin with, and it's sort of hidden because it's on the underside of your nose, and that skin just tends to heal very well, luckily.
So can you even think about a cosmetic change when you need a rhinoplasty from an injury? So say you got hit in the face with a baseball. And then what are the steps that somebody might go through? And if they say, well, you know, I actually never really liked my nose before the baseball. So, you know, what does that look like?
I always recommend addressing any fracture deformities and cosmetic concerns at the same time, rather than undergoing multiple procedures, because it's definitely easier to do it all at once. And definitely we can make cosmetic changes and correct an injury all at once.
Now, is that something that they have to wait? Let's see, today I get hit with a baseball. Can I have you fix me on Friday? Or do we have to wait a little while?
Actually, when somebody breaks their nose and you have a fracture that is displaced, meaning the bone is out of alignment, the best case scenario is that gets fixed in about a week. And that doesn't involve an open surgery. That basically just involves resetting the bones in the correct place. Unfortunately, that often doesn't happen in time. And so the fracture heals. And in that case, we usually recommend waiting for at least 6 months for surgery so that you're fully healed from the fracture and all of the swelling has gone down. And we really see what the final outcome of the injury is before going in there and making changes.
So speaking of swelling, that's a really good point. So how long does it take to recover from a rhinoplasty? And when can you start to maybe go out and be amongst the public and feel comfortable?
Patients go home the same day of surgery, and generally they will want to stay home for the first few days after surgery. They have a small cast on the nose for a week, and they're free to go on long walks 3 to 4 days after surgery, and then start light aerobics after maybe 2 weeks, return to usual activity after 3 weeks. But for the first 2 weeks, I would say your face and your nose are going to be noticeably swollen, and there can be some bruising under your eyes, which usually resolves within 10 days. So I would say, although you can go out really anytime after surgery, you may not want to make a lot of public appearances for the first week to 2 weeks.
Okay. And does it affect your breathing? That swelling, I would think, makes it like almost like you have a stuffy nose.
That's a lot of feedback I get, is that there's not actually a whole lot of pain after surgery. It's more the stuffiness that people complain about. And that's just because, you know, they're swelling on the outside and on the inside. And so it does take a few weeks to really clear up.
In terms of a final result, I've heard that there's a lot of swelling with noses and that that final result might take some time to see. What do you kind of advise patients about?
Well, other people might not notice 2 weeks later that you have a lot of swelling or just had surgery. You do still have quite a bit of swelling, actually. And it generally takes about a year for the final results of rhinoplasty to emerge. And studies have actually measured the amount of swelling and shown that about 65% of the swelling goes away within the first 6 weeks, but then gradually over the next year, the swelling little by little subsides. And it's partially because the nose is not particularly vascular, so it takes longer for the swelling to go away. But it's also that it takes time for the skin to conform to the new structure underneath. So if you have a large nose or a hump and we're reducing that, you still have the same amount of skin on the outside. So it takes time for that to kind of shrink wrap down to the new structure. I mean, that's a very gradual process.
Interesting. I've never really thought about that, but you're right. If you're fixing things inside, what do you do? It's not like
we're not taking things off on the outside or leaving that alone.
So that's interesting. So 65% of the swelling is gone in about 4 to 6 weeks. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I know that it might be a rare thing, but what would your options be if you have a rhinoplasty and a year goes by and you really have your final result and you still don't like your nose?
Of course, nobody likes that outcome, the surgeon or the patient, but sometimes patients might have a concern or asymmetry that still bothers them. Typically, if there is one, it's minor compared to their original concerns. And so in that case, the options would be either a minor revision procedure to make a small change. And in that case, for example, endonasal or a closed approach might be a good option if there are small changes that need to be made. Another option is actually non-surgical rhinoplasty or liquid rhinoplasty, especially if it's a small asymmetry externally, then just adding a little bit of filler can be an option as well. I mean, revision rhinoplasty is pretty much always a little bit more challenging than a primary rhinoplasty or somebody who's never had surgery before, but it's something that I like the challenge of it, I guess. And I do a lot of revision surgeries. And often one of the differences compared to primary rhinoplasty is that it might require the use of cartilage grafts because after an initial surgery, there might not be enough cartilage or underlying structure left to make the changes that we need to make. The other difference is that it can actually take quite a bit longer for the swelling to go down after a revision surgery because there already is scar tissue. We say that after a revision rhinoplasty surgery, it can take up to 2 years for all the swelling to go away completely and for you to have your final result. But in general, it's really the vast majority of it is still gone within the first few months.
So you mentioned cartilage grafts, and I actually want to talk to you more about that in a separate episode. Don't you think that we should? That's like kind of a whole big topic that we could go into.
Yeah, definitely. I think revision rhinoplasty and cartilage grafting, yeah, that would be a great topic for a future episode.
Okay, well, we're going to do that. We're going to do that. Let's get ready. Now, is rhinoplasty different for different ethnic groups? So like if you have Asian or African-American patients, is there anything that you're having to consider as a surgeon or them as a patient in terms of what that approach might be or what their risks might be or what their outcome might be?
Yeah, so the difference really lies in the anatomy. So the shape and the structure of the nasal bones and the cartilages and the skin tend to differ in patients of different racial and ethnic backgrounds. One thing that Asian and African American patients request more commonly is dorsal augmentation or augmentation rhinoplasty, which means building up the bridge of the nose. Mm. And another really important consideration for me, the surgeon, is that non-Caucasian patients often have thicker nasal skin, whereas somebody with really thin skin, you have to be careful that you're not going to see too much underneath and that all the cartilage surfaces are very smooth. And somebody with thick skin, it's almost the opposite, where you want to have kind of a more well-defined structure of cartilage underneath that you will be able to see through the thicker skin.
Oh, so you talked about the dorsal mm-hmm. height, I guess, is how tall your nose is maybe.
Yeah.
But then what about the width of like their nostrils? If the nostrils are extra wide, is there mm-hmm. a way to sort of narrow that?
Yeah. So there's something called alar-based reduction, which involves making incisions either along the outer edges of the nostrils or even inside the nostrils. And that can be done to reduce the overall width of the nose. There are different orientations of the nostrils, and there's a classification system. And based on that, there are different ways to narrow the base of the nose. But yeah, that's something that is more commonly requested, I would say, in African American and Asian patients as well.
So really you could either do it from the outside or from the inside, you're saying, mm-hmm. depending on the...
And sometimes actually a combination of the two.
Oh, okay. So one thing that I've read is that we hear about body dysmorphia and people who look in the mirror and they see something different about their body. It could be also having to do with their face or maybe over fixating on something on their face that bothers them. And so is that a thing with rhinoplasty?
Body dysmorphic disorder, or BDD for mm-hmm. short, it's an obsessive preoccupation with either a very slight defect or a non-existent defect in your appearance. And it differs from kind of a normal concern with your appearance because it causes a lot of emotional stress, functional impairment. Patients may skip work or social events because of it and really spend many hours a day thinking about it and trying to correct it. And the prevalence in the general population is a little over 2%, but we have found that about 10% of patients who are seeking facial plastic surgery actually have body dysmorphic disorder. So it is a little bit more, I mean, it's not the majority of patients definitely seeking right. rhinoplasty, but it is more common in the patients seeking facial plastic surgery, including rhinoplasty. And so it's something to be aware of for sure.
And how are you able to help them to get a realistic expectation about what their outcome could be? Or do you have certain tools that you use to help them be able to see that potential outcome or help them through whatever barrier they're having?
Mm-hmm. So it's really important for me as a surgeon to recognize patients who might have body dysmorphic disorder, because in patients who have a severely distorted body image, their issue isn't really aesthetic. It's actually more psychological. And so cosmetic surgery isn't a good option because it's not going to make them happy. It's actually not going to relieve their distress at all. And the vast majority of patients with body dysmorphic disorder, I think about 96-97%, are dissatisfied after receiving cosmetic treatments.
Oh.
So it's always important for me to, you know, assess the patient's concerns, assess their goals, and then go over with them in detail what I think that we can accomplish. Mm-hmm. But in patients who seem to have unrealistic perceptions about their appearance, which is a little bit different, I kind of ask a few questions to delve into their history more and their goals for surgery. And if it does seem that they might be suffering from body dysmorphic disorder, then, you know, explain to them that really my goal is to relieve their distress about what they're coming in to see me about. And when it's more related to an unrealistic perception, the most effective solution is actually discussing that with a psychiatrist or a psychologist who specializes in BDD for further assessment and treatment. So, I mean, it's a tricky subject, but I try to explain that, you know, I have their best interest in mind. And so in those cases, that's really what's going to help them the most.
In for the general population, you know, I'm thinking I want my nose changed. Here's the things that I want to have fixed or modified. And then, you know, I have a consultation with you. What are the ways that you can help show me what my projected result might be?
So I always start by going over what the patient's concerns are, what bothers them, what they want to change, and then, you know, examining what I'm working with, what their anatomy is like. And then we take photos. And based on my conversation with them during the visit, I will morph the photos and so that they can see the before and then the simulated after photo. And then we review those to see if we're on the same page. And that I think is a really good communication tool because that really shows the patient what I think we're capable of accomplishing with surgery and make sure that I really understand what they're telling me because patients don't know all the anatomical terms for the nose and everything. And it's, so it's sometimes hard to describe in words, but a picture is worth a million words. Wait, is it a thousand words?
Yeah. A picture's worth a thousand words.
A picture's worth a thousand words. Yeah.
We could have picture inflation and it could be, you know, a picture's worth a trillion words. Why not? Yeah, right. But well, that's really nice. So that it helps become a way for the two of you to communicate. And I think the other thing, as we are sitting here talking, looking at each other, you look at yourself in the mirror and you see the front of your nose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But really, you don't see yourself in profile very often unless somebody happens to take a picture of you. And I think that imaging where you're actually then taking a profile photo of the patient where they're with you and they can see.
And that's why I do the morphs from the front and actually from both sides, because like we said, there's always some asymmetry. So I morph the front view and then also both of the sides. So we can evaluate all of those views.
Now, how many times might a patient, once they see themselves from the side, maybe the balance is wrong with the chin? Or how many times is a chin part of that discussion?
That's a good question, because in patients who have kind of an underdeveloped or small chin, that really changes the overall balance of the face and will make the nose look relatively bigger than it is just because of the proportions. So discussing a chin implant or chin augmentation with them is an important part of the consult, because that's really going to dramatically improve their rhinoplasty result because it will give their whole facial profile a more balanced, harmonious appearance.
And is that something that, you know, should that be recommended and they're on board and want to do that? You could do it in the same surgery?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Usually I would do it at the same time.
So I think we really did a great job at covering rhinoplasty in general, and we're going to do some episodes. One, we have already talked about, we want to do an episode about revision rhinoplasties and using grafts or maybe a nasal implant. We want to talk also with you about the non-surgical rhinoplasty, those liquid rhinoplasties. And we also are going to do an episode, so everybody stay tuned, on septoplasty, or rhinosepto. So which means you're maybe dealing with not just the external cosmetic prettiness of the nose or handsomeness of the nose, but how it's functioning and how you can breathe, which is sort of important. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, those are the two critical functions of the nose, are to breathe and also to fit your face and be balanced with the rest of your face. So that's kind of what a septorhinoplasty is addressing, is the function and the appearance. And sometimes the septum has a significant role in the external appearance of the nose too, actually. So we'll have lots of things to talk about.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. So for our listeners and our audience, we'll have everything in the show notes that we've talked about today. And you'll be able to go onto our website, read about Dr. Riedler. You can listen to her other podcasts. And it's on her bio page. We have the Meet Dr. Riedler episode, which is super interesting. I encourage you all to go take a listen. And then really, I think the next thing that a lot of people want to know is, how do I learn more about pricing? And we have everything on our website. So we have everything in terms of ranges for prices, in terms of financing options, or how you can save money, how you can spread your payment out. Fix what you want now and pay as you go. So, which is, you know, we got to be realistic. And so, and I think a lot of people don't realize that we do have financing. And just like you finance your car, you could finance your notes. Mm-hmm. So when they have a consultation with you, is it a virtual consultation or is it in person?
It's in person, because it's important for me to see the nose in its three dimensions and also take the photos. And also to look on the inside of the nose too, because it's the appearance we're looking at, but it's also important to know what the inside of the nose looks like and what the septum looks like, and make sure that the breathing isn't an issue and it's not going to become an issue. Mm-hmm. So I like to do the consults in person. I think I can get the most information and give the patient the most information as well.
Great. And then if you're listening today, we want to ask you for a special favor. If you love the La Jolla Cosmetic Podcast and you've learned something today, it's helped you make a decision, please tell your friends. We'd love that. And also write a review of the show on Apple Podcasts or Good Pods or wherever you're listening, because we love reviews. As you know, our practice, we're all about reviews, and we have them on our website on every page. Practically, you can read reviews, which is, you know, it's, we're proud of our 34 years of history so far and the thousands of reviews that we have and 5-star reviews. And so we want to hear from you also about the podcast. And if there's something you want us to discuss that piqued your interest and you'd like to have Dr. Riedler address on a future episode, we'd love to have that. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
Take a screenshot of this podcast episode with your phone and show it at your consultation or appointment, or mention the promo code PODCAST to receive $25 off any service or product of $50 or more at La Jolla Cosmetic. La Jolla Cosmetic is located just off the I-5 San Diego Freeway in the ZyMed building on the Scripps Memorial Hospital campus. To learn more, go to ljcsc.com or follow the team on Instagram at ljcsc. The La Jolla Cosmetic Podcast is a production of The Axis, THEAXIS.io.